everybody. Hope you're all doing well this morning. Welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show, Tampa Bay's libertarian radio voice. I am Paul Molloy. It's Monday, October 27th. Wow, we're almost at the end of this month. Well into the fall. Thank you very much for joining us. In a few minutes, we're going to be talking with Chris Horner of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. And we are going to be talking about a lawsuit that they have brought against the Environmental Protection Agency. So stay tuned. Also, are liberals seeking an alternative to Hillary Clinton for president? Well, it looks like they might be, and we're going to talk about it. And in our Freedom Works Ultimate Top 10 list, we had given you the top 10 worst airports in the world on Friday, the top 10 best airports in the world today, as judged by the travelers. Freedom Works, we come to you Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. here on the Tantalk Radio Network. And our purpose is to promote libertarian ideas. We are not affiliated with the Libertarian Party, but we're here to talk about more individual freedom for you. We believe that the more individual freedom there is, the happier, the more productive, the more peaceful, everything is better. So that's why we do the show. And we're glad you're with us. If you're interested in calling in, 866-826-1340, 866-826-1340. You can find out more about our show by going to our website, thefreedomworks.com, thefreedomworks.com. We have all of our shows lined up for you. Big Ed's got them in a chronological order. You can see who we had on and what our top 10 list is, thefreedomworks.com. Well, in a few minutes, Chris Horner will be joining us. He is an attorney. He's a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. And we're going to talk about the Environmental Protection Agency. Now, last week, the EPA filed its latest effort to dismiss a lawsuit brought by CEI over their destroying federal records. The EPA's destroying federal records without giving a reason. Now, this has some similarities between another government agency, the Internal Revenue Service, and the Lois Lerner files. According to U.S. law, agencies have to notify the National Archivist of the destruction or alteration of records. And they have to try to recover those records. It's written in the law. Most of us wouldn't know that. I did not know it. But according to the Competitive Enterprise Institute, the EPA is shirking its duty and denying that such a problem exists. So this will be an interesting topic of discussion. In the meantime, there is some breaking news. Apparently, a nurse at the center of that Ebola quarantine up in the Northeast, New Jersey, can go home. So she's apparently doing well. So maybe they're getting this whole thing under control. But Governor Christie made the announcement. She has been cleared by the Center for Disease Control. So lots of people on pins and needles about Ebola and how the United States is handling it. I guess it's one more, what would you call it, a stone in the shoe of President Obama. He's had one problem after another. Anyway, that's good news. In the meantime, we got a couple of things to talk about for Hillary Clinton. Number one, she was at a Democratic rally in Massachusetts. And she was speaking to her Democratic constituency, or, Democratic people. And she came up with a rather strange statement. Listen to this. She says, businesses and corporations are not the job creators of America. Now think about it. She said that businesses and corporations are not the job creators of America. Quote, don't let anybody tell you that it's corporations and businesses that create jobs. Now, where does she, now she was trying to defend them raising the minimum wage and attacking trickle-down economics. But how do you come out and say that? That line, I think, is going to come back to haunt her. Anyway, Chris Horner is going to be joining us in just a couple of minutes here on Freedom Works, so stay tuned. Ask the girl what she wanted to be. She said, baby, can't you see? I wanna be famous, a star on the screen. But you can do something in between.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Tom O'Brien is on the Tantalk Radio Network. Every Monday through Friday from 4 till 5 p.m., Tom takes to the airwaves as he breaks down the day's market action. Tom combines his technical knowledge of the markets with his years of trading experience to take your calls and questions every market day from 4 to 5 p.m. Whether you're new to trading or an active day trader, don't miss out on the Tom O'Brien Show live on the Tantalk Radio Network from 4 to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday.
The Nutrition Center Hour is brought to you by Total Nutrition Center of Clearwater. Total Nutrition Center is a full-line supplement store located in the Bayside Bridge Shopping Plaza at the intersection of McMullen Booth Road and State Road 590, which is just one block north of Ruth Eckerd Hall. We've been servicing the Clearwater area with nutritional products and advice for almost two decades now. Call us with any questions at 727-724-1111. That's 727-724-1111. The website is totalnutritionusa.com.
Tune in to The Book Club with John Austin.
Well, I actually taught public speaking, as you probably know, in college for 7-8 years.
You could ask the questions and answer them yourself. I could just sit here.
You ask terrific questions, you listen, and you it's just a joy to work with you.
Well, I love
working. We should go on the road, you know?
Right, well, I'd be happy to. And
you may not be able to go on the road, but don't worry. We bring The Book Club to you every Tuesday at noon right here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
The excitement happens every day at the Clearwater Marine Aquarium. You can find yourself in the water with a dolphin, feeding a stingray, watching our world-famous dolphin shows, sailing on our eco boat tour, and even having your picture taken with a dolphin. The Clearwater Marine Aquarium is home of the world's most famous dolphin, Winter, the star of the movie Dolphin Tale, filmed at the Clearwater Marine Aquarium. Winter lost her tail but is now healthy and swimming freely due to a prosthetic tail. Be exposed to marine life and more. Take a behind-the-scenes tour to see how the animal hospital works. View the animal's food prep kitchen, the vet's lab, the surgical suite, and rehab areas. The aquarium houses river otters, sea turtles, stingrays, sharks, and a host of brilliant fish. Come to the Clearwater Marine Aquarium, 249 Windward Passage in Clearwater, or check them on the web at seawinter.com for more information. Open Sunday through Thursday, 10 to 5. Friday and Saturday, 10 to 6. Call 727-441-1790. Make plans to enjoy the day at the Clearwater Marine Aquarium, 249 Windward Passage in Clearwater, the official home of Winter, the star of the movie Dolphin Tale, a last memory.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back on Freedom Works. Thank you very much for joining us this morning. And we've got Chris Horner, who is an attorney and a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute in Washington. And CEI is, I guess you could say, having an ongoing battle with the EPA, and it has to do with notes and paperwork on their climate agenda. Chris, welcome to Freedom Works. And can you tell us a little bit about this ongoing suit?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. We were first informed a couple of years ago that the woman who had been placed in charge of what's known colloquially as the war on coal, when the president vowed that we can't keep our thermostats where we want, that he would bankrupt coal, that he would make electricity rates necessarily skyrocket. Gina McCarthy, who is now the administrator of EPA, had moved over to text messaging in lieu of emails, since the emails were being sought after under the Freedom of Information Act. They were being searched and produced under FOIA. So should text messages. They're just provided as an alternative to email. Well, Ms. McCarthy moved over to texting in lieu of email like a teenager. She was sending thousands of texts. We later found out by obtaining metadata that just essentially showing who she was corresponding with, when, at what number. So we had sought them. And EPA claimed no records, which is what an agency says, well, we don't have anything responsive to your request. So we sought all of her email, her text messages, and they said no records. So we said, tell you what, I'd like to see your phone bills. And it showed just a gross number. And it showed she was sending up to almost 300 texts a month of receiving. And so we said, tell you what, they said, well, she destroyed them all. They said this through the Department of Justice, okay, through counsel, in response to the first of a series of lawsuits we filed. Well, she destroyed them all, but they were all personal. And we said, on the EPA phone, assigned for EPA-related correspondence. Yes, yes, that one. Okay, 3,952 over 3 years, so 10,000. Yeah, all personal, yep. So we got 7 months of this metadata. And it turned out that's pretty unlikely since she was texting to and from her senior aides in the war on coal. So we filed suit, and we're seeking two things. Stop this cyber bonfire. EPA is destroying not just McCarthy's, but her predecessors and all of her colleagues. They're destroying all of their correspondence. And we said, stop it, get an injunction to stop this cyber bonfire, obviously unlawful, and to trigger this process. What you've heard that the IRS has now agreed to do in the Lois Lerner hard drive case, well, we've been in court for now a year and a half, more than a year, seeking that EPA do this to recreate all of these texts they've destroyed. And EPA's response was defiant. They told the court this is intrusive, an intrusive attempt to make them comply with record-keeping and disclosure laws that no one can make them to comply with. And we've gone several rounds. The court said, no, CEI, you can seek an injunction. So just last week, Friday night, Thursday night, EPA filed through the Department of Justice another attempt to dismiss this, saying, look, we've sent a letter telling the archivists they shouldn't bother looking, and that's all we need to do. So I think we know who we're dealing with by now.
Right. It does seem like it's playing along the same lines as the IRS scandal. Let's go back and let the listeners know that this has to do with the whole issue of climate change, right?
Yes, yes. Well, ostensibly, nominally. Nobody claims this war on this effort to get your energy prices to skyrocket, to let the state decide where your thermostat should be set. Nobody says that would actually impact climate. Nobody, no computer model. But yes, it's in the name.
Right.
This hysterical, don't look now, details to follow, sign here, agree to this. Yes, it's in the name of climate change.
And the CEI wants to get these pieces of information to show an agenda towards the whole climate change controversy. Is the point of this to show that the government is not being fair when it comes to this issue and is therefore acting in ways that are either biased or you know what I mean? What is the intent here?
Right. The point is severalfold. First, the point is that the Freedom of Information Act doesn't require me to have a point. These records are mine, yours, not hers. Second, we have found improperly close, in fact, collusive relationships with these green pressure groups.
Okay.
To the point that McCarthy will say in emails we obtain, oh, I'm in contact with these people, but none of her emails with these people are turned over. Well, I have a feeling I know how she's in contact with them. But second, these rules have been proposed. They're the subject of lawsuits. They're the subject of all of the usual regulatory process that takes years in order to block these efforts, that the agencies are going to be given great deference by the courts. Well, you're the experts. You're EPA. You're not a bunch of political, ideological hacks. You're experts. We'll give you deference. Well, in this case, there's a record that we now know that the rule's based upon that has been set on fire. Now, why? First of all, there's a reason they moved over to text messaging for some of their correspondence. I don't know what it is, but I really would like to read it. B, the rule has to be premised on a record, and they're destroying half of it. So before, I suspect that one of our lawsuits, a court will reasonably say, no rules for you. No rules for you until you go back and recreate what you've destroyed unlawfully, because there's a law that says you have to. And they're saying, well, yeah, there is, but nobody can make us actually do it.
Yeah. We're talking with Chris Horner. Again, he is an attorney as well as a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. And we're discussing a lawsuit that's been filed by the CEI against the Environmental Protection Agency and accusing them of destroying federal records without explanation. Chris, these days we've got, you know, with text messaging and all of these other things, we're kind of having to revisit the whole concept of what can be considered records and what cannot be considered records. Obviously, emails, as in the Lois Lerner situation, are considered records that must be kept when being used for government purposes. And you would think the text messages would fall under the same category, because technically, I guess they're emails as well. But is there a defense put up by the EPA that text messages would fall under a different category?
Not per se. What they're saying is there's no dispute that if it's an instant message, and by the way, they provide them instant messaging. It's called, it's not SharePoint. It's, we found out about it. They used instant messaging to create the false identity account I found for the previous administrator named Richard Windsor. You may have heard about that. They set that up on same time. Instant messaging. That's what Lois Lerner was referring to in one of her famous emails. Are these instant messages being preserved? No. And she wrote back, perfect.
Oh, yeah.
They're supposed to be. All of these are identical. There's no legal distinction. No one is claiming a legal distinction. Here's what they're saying. Well, we use text messaging for things that we wouldn't have to keep as records. So in other words, if I have a doctor's appointment, that's what I'll use text messaging for. They didn't say that, but they're saying these are all non-record material. They created a phrase called unrecord material. That is, nothing in these text messages would actually be the kind of thing you would preserve. But we know that is a, and I'm using the word deliberately here, it is, it's an untruth. It's a lie because they know what we know. We have emails that discuss what they were discussing in their text messages. And the email was preserved as a record, and it's discussing the same thing they say that they were discussing in the text messages, but they burned the text message. So if the email was preserved as a record, which time are you lying? The email was a record or the text message wasn't. We have a lot of circumstantial evidence. For example, she claims when she doesn't know we're going to get metadata. She claims they were all personal. Then we get metadata and we find out she's corresponding with her senior aides.
We're talking about Gina McCarthy here, right?
Gina, the head of EPA, right. Yeah, and at the time. So there's a lot of smoke from this cyber bonfire. No one's claiming texts or instant messages or moving over to Gmail or false identities aren't themselves the same as any old email. What they're saying is, yeah, but just by chance, in these many tens of thousands of text messages, we're pretty sure we only discuss doctor appointments and trains being late.
It does sound very suspicious, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. Now, can they preserve, like in the Lois Lerner situation, it turns out that even though they may have been deleted on her computer, that they're still somewhere in storage. Is that the same situation for text messages?
Well, their argument so far has been the carrier, Verizon and AT&T, didn't preserve them for a very long time. Therefore, there's no way to retrieve them. They didn't actually establish that. The answer is yes, they can preserve them. I have some turned over from the, just, you know, in a very recent period, they found some because they hadn't destroyed them all yet. We know they're created when they're sent to receive. They exist. And when they don't exist, it means they've been deleted. So EPA has a requirement, and this is the more important question. Given that they are no different than emails, aren't you required to preserve them, whether or not Verizon does? And the answer is yes. And they're saying, well, sorry, we made a mistake and we'll train our employees now, but no harm, no foul. Forget about the tens of thousands we've destroyed. Forget about that. And you've got the most expensive rulemaking, harmful rulemaking in history here. Obviously, you're using this alternative for a reason, and we want you to go back and try to create it. They're required to preserve it. They're saying, well, we didn't, and the carrier didn't for very long, therefore don't bother looking. The don't bother looking thing is really, that's where the argument is right now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So what do you think the chances are that the EPA will be able to dismiss this lawsuit?
Well, what I'll tell you is that the last time they tried a few weeks ago, the court said, I won't get weedy, but what they said is CEI has four claims to seek these indictments. I'm going to dismiss two of them because the law doesn't allow you to seek an injunction under this Federal Records Act. However, that doesn't mean you can't seek an injunction to enforce this law. In other words, we can use things like the Mandamus Act, compel the government to do its job. Even though the Federal Records Act may not be enforceable, where it says the government shall preserve, maintain, trigger investigations, recreate, It's a right for the taxpayer without a remedy. The court said, however, we invite CEI to seek an injunction using the Mandamus Act or the administrative procedure. So we're still in court. The judge indicated when she said it was implausible that they didn't think these were records, any of them, that we should seek an injunction under these other means that we already filed under. So right now it looks pretty good, but I, with that said, I do not guess courts anymore.
Right. So, and this is, which court is this, a circuit court?
This is the the Federal District Court of the of Washington, the District of Columbia, Washington, D.C.
Okay. And if it would be appealed by one side or the other, is that the next, is the Supreme Court that step?
It would be the D.C. Circuit.
Circuit Court, oh.
Yeah, D.C. Circuit, which is considered the second most important court of the land. It's the key FOIA court. And all I can say is I know where the merits and the equities lie. Clearly, they're destroying your text messages,
right,
people. And they're seeking to regulate you on the basis of things they hid in these things they destroyed. We know they should recreate these, and they should not be able to regulate without doing so. I cannot ever promise what a court will do, given whatever a law says.
Well, I'll tell you something. I think the United States should be, and people in our country should be so happy that there is an organization like yours that is looking out for us. Because these are the kinds of things that if it wasn't for groups like you, we would never hear about. And as it turns out, even, you know, especially with the kind of press that we have these days in our country, they don't talk a lot about it. So these are the kinds of things that we're so happy, at least I am, and I know many, many people are, that you are pursuing. You know, it is so important to us. And we appreciate that you would do that, Chris. And continue on with your good fight, because it does sound, I mean, you know, the if we can get things like this out in the open, you know, we're all that much better off. So we thank you so much, and we thank you very much, Chris, for joining us this morning, and keep up the good fight.
Appreciate that very much. Thank you.
All right. Chris Horner of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Going to take our break. Don't forget, the world's friendliest airports in our top 10 list.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Show me the money.
It's the Employment Opportunity Hour with Gene Hodge every Thursday night from 7 until 8.
So the purpose of the show is to help you out there to find something that you enjoy doing instead of a job. And at the start of the show, I normally give out a formula, which I know will guarantee you to find the type of job that you want right now.
Find out the formula to an enjoyable job with Gene Hodge's Employment Opportunity Hour every Thursday night from 7 until 8 here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
Show me the money.
At the Oaks of Clearwater, you'll enjoy a lifestyle to fit your needs. From independent living, assisted living, memory care, and skilled nursing. Our exciting independent lifestyle is the perfect combination of freedom, comfort, and security. Enjoy total independence with peace of mind. Our independent lifestyle includes chef-prepared meals in our beautiful waterfront dining room, a continental breakfast, all utilities, including cable and telephone, housekeeping with linen service, scheduled transportation, including trips for shopping, local restaurants, theater, and more. Our activities program is second to none. At the Oaks of Clearwater, you'll enjoy affordable luxury waterfront senior living with a million-dollar view. Call today, 727-445-4069, and discover where caring, compassionate service really makes the difference.
Let's Go Bowling, heard on the Tantalk Radio Network every Wednesday, 11 a.m. to 12 Eastern Time. Sponsored by 12 Strike and Innovative Ball Spinner. If you bowl, if you haven't bowled in a while, or if you never bowled, why not you be one of 65 million people who have bowled last year? Listen to the tip of the week, bowling stars, old and new. Let's Go Bowling Show, GoBowlingShow.com.
Go yard is a metaphor used in baseball, meaning to hit a home run. Life struggles can make you feel like you just struck out. It's times like these that we need a little batting practice to pick ourselves back up and get back in the game. Whether you are dealing with marital issues, drug addiction, rebellious teens, anxiety, depression, or just generally having a bad day, call Mama Mac. If life has you down 0-2, before you strike out, learn to go yard. Go yard with Mama Mac on this radio station, Thursdays, 6 o'clock.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We're back on Freedom Works. Our music stopped, but that's okay. There it goes. A little bit of the Beatles. You know what happens is there's always a pause in some of their songs. That's probably where we were. We're doing Beatles today. Well, welcome again back to Freedom Works. We were talking a little bit about Hillary Clinton. And she said something that we discussed earlier about the situation with the businesses. She said, don't let anybody tell you that it's corporations and businesses that create jobs. Think about that. It isn't. Do I just wander down the street and say, I got a job, and away I go, start making money? I don't think so. I think businesses and corporations do have something to do with jobs in this country, so that may come back to haunt her. In the meantime, and maybe this is part of the reason they're doing it, there are a bunch of liberals that are seeking alternatives to Hillary Clinton as the Democratic nominee for president. Some Democratic donors are meeting with potential challengers to Ms. Clinton. As an example, some liberal activists are trying to coax Senator Elizabeth Warren, I think she's out of New Hampshire, into running. As formidable as Mrs. Clinton looks, liberals are casting about for a committed populist to run against her in the Democratic nomination. They see the former Secretary of State as too closely aligned with large corporations, and they question whether she can be counted on to narrow the income gap in America. Wow. If Hillary Clinton is not liberal enough for her, then what are they going to need to do? Find a communist? She's pretty far left. Believe me, she is a populist. Remember she wrote that book, It Takes a Village? Think about it. It takes a village to raise a child, basically, was the theme of the book. Everybody has to be involved in the fight, right? Group rights. That's Hillary Clinton. And she's been that way ever since she was a young lady. So she's pretty far left. Elizabeth Warren is probably even a bit further to the left. Anyway, they do have some concerns that she's a bit of a war hawk. They remember that she did vote for the Iraq War. But the activists hope to either recruit a candidate able to capture the nomination outright or at least give Clinton enough of a scare that she embraces a progressive agenda. Their aim is to make the primary process a debate over the direction of the Democratic Party rather than an uncontested march by Mrs. Clinton to the nomination. Well, you know, the Democratic Party is indeed tilting further and further left. Can you think of any moderate Democrats these days? I think there are very few. Most of them have gone far, far to the left. And, you know, it's probably the same thing in the Republican Party, although I think there are some more moderate voices. I think the Republican Party tends to be a little bit more of an open group, if you want to know the truth, even though the Democrats always claim that there's intolerance in the Republican Party. I think it's the opposite way. I think the intolerance is generally in the Democratic Party. If you do not walk to the tune of their rather liberal agenda, you will find yourself on the outside very, very quickly. As an example, gay marriage. Have you heard of any Democrat that opposes gay marriage? And that's, you know, if you would have been a Democrat opposing it, you would be considered a moderate. But you can't think of any. Even here in Florida, Charlie Crist, who used to oppose gay marriage as a Republican governor, is now running for gay marriage as a Democratic gubernatorial nominee. He's turned completely around. He knows that he has to stay on that issue that way for political reasons. That's not the only thing he's turned 180 degrees on, but it happens to be one of them. And I'm not so sure Hillary can win the presidency at this point. She's got so much baggage from her days with Bill Clinton in the White House and some of the things that she has done on her own, that there are a lot of issues that will be brought up. It will be quite a battle. I'm not even sure she can win the Democratic nomination for president. But that's in 2 years, so who knows? Lots of things could happen after that. Well, There is some news, as we had said earlier, about a nurse at the center of a New Jersey Ebola quarantine. She can go home. Her name is Casey Hickox, and Governor Chris Christie said that she is able to return home. She has been cleared by the Center for Disease Control. Now, I say that in the guise that the White House is trying to get states to reverse mandatory quarantines on Ebola patients. The decision by several U.S. states to impose mandatory quarantines for healthcare workers that have come back from West Africa and other Ebola-ravaged regions has sparked disagreement between the governors and the Obama administration. The White House says that the only way to stop the deadly virus is to get healthcare workers to the hardest-hit countries and has asked the governors to reconsider implementing quarantines because they will deter these kinds of efforts. Now, the White House confirmed it's working on new federal guidelines on returning healthcare workers exposed to Ebola, realizing the concern among Americans about the potential outbreak. Dr. Anthony Fauci, he's the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, went on those talk shows yesterday, and he says the 21-day quarantine is now being imposed here in Florida and also in Illinois, New Jersey, and New York, can have unintended consequences, those being that they will discourage healthcare workers from volunteering and going over to those countries in Africa where Ebola is raging. In fact, there's been about 4,500 people that have perished from the disease over there so far. He says, we do not want to put them in a position where it makes it very uncomfortable for them to even volunteer. Fauci went on to say that aggressive monitoring of people can accomplish the same result because people infected with Ebola do not become contagious until they start showing symptoms. But this is where there was this situation in New Jersey. Chris Christie, the governor there, said he wanted to defend his decision to impose a quarantine in New Jersey. He says he has an obligation to protect people there. And so, you know, this comes to a question of where does the federal government's laws leave off and the state laws kick in? The governor is like the president of each state, isn't he? And can make decisions based on what he thinks is best for his state. And that's what apparently what Chris Christie was doing. And sometimes what he wants to do steps on what the federal government wants to do. So that is an ongoing issue. Here's something here in Florida regarding Ebola. Our governor here, Rick Scott, has signed an executive order that mandates twice-a-day health evaluations for anyone who has come from one of the three countries in Africa that has the Ebola problem, Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. Now, so far, there are four people in Florida that fall into that category, according to the governor's office. And he says if a person is deemed to have had a high risk of getting the disease, he says that Florida will take further action, which may include a mandatory quarantine. Now, see, again, this is important in the sense of who has, and you know, it's a sticky wicket, too. I do believe, you know, as a libertarian, that the federal government, one of the things of the federal government, and it falls under providing for the common defense and security of our country, is to take control of methods that will help stem a contagious disease in our country. You cannot allow all 50 states to go their different ways. There does have to be, I think, some sort of a controlling, overseeing decision when it comes to people entering our country and leaving our country that might have symptoms of the disease. And that's where you need, since each, you know, because people are going from one state to another, this is where I think the federal government makes a good case for coming up with some rules. But with those rules as the blanket, there's no reason why each state cannot conduct additional rules for their own state that might be a little bit stricter than the federal government. This was the case in New Jersey. This is the case here in Florida. Here's Governor Rick Scott again. I want to be clear that we're taking this aggressive action at the state level out of an abundance of caution in the absence of much-needed Ebola risk classification information from the CDC, the Center for Disease Control. So I don't think there's panic yet, but a lot of people are very, very concerned about what's going on with this disease. There's a lot of fear out there. And so it's going to be something that, you know, is going to be with us for a while. It does seem like they're able to monitor, and at least so far, at least a couple of people seem to be getting better that had contracted the disease, including this healthcare worker in New Jersey. Anyway, we're going to take a short break. Don't forget, we're going to give you the top 10 best airports in the world, so don't go away.
To let her into your home, then you can start to make it better. Hey Jude, don't be...
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
You could have lunch with the king.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog.
You could have lunch with the queen. Or you could have lunch with the Chamber. Every Monday at noon, join your host, Alex Petro, for an insider's look at local business, the latest news, who's who in local business, plus special guests who offer a unique perspective on what matters most, local business. Lunch with the Chamber, Mondays from noon until 1, here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
Frozen. In that instant when the puck appears in the back of the net. In that moment when jaws open in astonishment. In that second, everything stands still. But the next second, you are the energy that shatters the stillness. The Tampa Bay Lightning. Be the thunder.
Lightning single game tickets are on sale now. Visit TampaBayLightning.com or call 800-745-3000.
Hello, I'm Jim Velasquez. Does getting a lousy 1% on your CDs make you sick to your stomach? Inflation is hovering at 3%, so what's really happening? Allow me, Jim Velasquez, to send you my free report. If you haven't reviewed your CDs in a while, don't get this report. It will break your heart. If you want to fight back and beat the bank, text RETIRE to 72727 for this free report. Let's beat the bank. Text RETIRE to 72727 for your free report.
Are you looking for that perfect gift for that special someone? Birthday, anniversary, or just because? Stop in and say hello to Leanna, 607 North Myrtle Avenue in Clearwater. Open Air Designs is the official florist and home decor center of the Tantalk Radio Network. Check out the website, www.openairflorist.net, or call Leanna today, 727-443-1963. Send flowers through Open Air, 727-443-1963.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back on Freedom Works. Excuse me, I am Paul Malloy, and we appreciate your being with us this Monday morning. Well, will he or won't he? We were talking about Hillary Clinton. It does sound like she wants to be president and will be running. But there's been a question here in Florida about our native son, Jeb Bush, former governor, and whether or not he will run for president. Well, looking at the Tampa Bay Times this morning, and his son says it is very likely that daddy's going to run. Former Florida Governor Jeb Bush moving forward on a potential 2016 White House run. And it appears more likely he will enter the field, according to George P. Bush, his son, who, by the way, is running for office in Texas. In an interview aired yesterday, George Bush, George P., we should call him. Boy, there's so many George and Bushes, and wow, you got to Make sure you get all the initials here. You know, G.W. Bush, G.H.W. Bush. This is G.P. Bush. Anyway, he told ABC's This Week that his dad is still assessing a presidential bid, but suggests it was more likely that he would seek the White House this time rather than just turn it down. He declined to run 2 years ago, despite encouragement from Republicans. George P. says, I think it's more likely that he will be running this time. He's giving this a serious thought and moving forward. George P. was asked if that meant it was more likely that he'll run than not. He said that he'll run. If you had asked me a few years back, I would have said it was less likely. So, there are going to be lots of hats in the ring on the Republican side, apparently. We got Chris Christie thinking of running. We got Scott Walker in Wisconsin thinking of running. We've got the other Wisconsinite who was ran as vice president on the Romney ticket, whose name I cannot remember, thinking of running. So there are many, many, many people that are probably going to line up on the Republican side. There may be just a couple of people that are thinking about it on the Democratic side, thinking of challenging Hillary Clinton. But then there's Rand Paul, I should say, who is probably the most libertarian of all of the people on the Republican side that would be running. There is that doctor, that brain surgeon, the black brain surgeon, conservative, thinking very much about running. My goodness, they got, I tell you what, we'd have to get a lot of chairs and have a large room for all the Republican candidates at this point that are thinking of running. I think, talked a little bit about this on Friday, but I want to bring it up again because I think it's so important. There was a survey of the nation's knowledge of our health care laws, and there is such a wide gap in knowledge about the Affordable Care Act and about health insurance, even though there's been a huge campaign, $1 billion, an educational campaign to try to supposedly teach people what the new health care situation is all about. But the American Institute for Research has come out on the eve, by the way, of open enrollment for Obamacare again, and found that most people think they know more about health care and health insurance than they really do. And despite last year's taxpayer-funded marketing blitz to educate them, this survey of about 800 people aged 22 to 64 found that younger Americans were the most confused about health care and health insurance. And they were the focus of the government's ad campaign to educate. They were also most likely to use the health insurance marketplace set up under Obamacare. So listen to this. And again, this is the people between 22 and 64. That's, you know, basically the adults. About half could identify general characteristics of an HMO. 50%. An HMO. 23% could identify characteristics of a PPO. Now, those are basic kinds of insurance groups, a PPO and an HMO. Usually, you have a choice between one or the other. When comparing insurance plans, 42% of the group were not at all or only somewhat likely to check what a plan will and will not cover before getting health care, health insurance. 42%, not at all, or only somewhat likely to compare plans. I mean, if you're not going to compare plans, how do you know which one is best for you? Generally, younger people were less health insurance literate. Well, that makes sense, right? They're less knowledgeable about everything until they get older. For example, on average, those between 22 to 34 correctly answered 55% of knowledge and skills items on the survey. People between 55 to 64 answered 63% correctly. So there you go. It's not surprising. It's a little saddening, but we don't know enough about it, and it's becoming more and more complicated. And this is what happens when you get the government involved in any product or service. All right. It is time for our top 10 list. And we are delighted. We gave you the top 10 worst airports in terms of being customer friendly on Friday. And Chris, by the way, is with us, joining us here. He's going to be doing the drum roll for us as we present the top 10 best airports in the world in terms of being customer friendly. And by the way, this comes from sleepinginairports.net. Now, isn't that a great name for a website? Sleepinginairports.net.
Okay. Gotta love it. Gotta love it, don't you?
So I guess Sleeping in Airports would know what the top 10 best are. They did a survey. So here we go. The number 10 best airport in the world is Zurich International Airport in Switzerland. It offers swift, easy connections and clean facilities. So bravo to Zurich. Number 9, Amsterdam Schiphol International Airport. Now, travelers praise this airport for being an efficient, comfortable, and very friendly place. You know, in Amsterdam, I think they've got very relaxed drug laws. Mm-hmm. So I can imagine how friendly they can be in the airport.
Well, you got to imagine the airport is still smoke-free.
Do you think so?
I can't imagine that you can smoke in the airport.
Yeah, even
regardless of how liberal they are with the marijuana laws.
I think you're right. I think you're right. Number 8. Tokyo Haneda International Airport. Now, one of the reasons it rates so highly is its great location and relative distance to the city center. And in Tokyo, in Japan, that's very, very important because it's a crowded area. Number 7, Hong Kong International Airport in Hong Kong. The great free market capitalistic city we all love. Milton Friedman would talk about Hong Kong all the time. They got a great airport. It's home to the country's largest IMAX theater, that airport. It also has a series of miniature gardens inside of it. So bravo for Hong Kong. Number 6. I would not have guessed this one. Kuala Lumpur International Airport in Malaysia. But would you have guessed that one, Chris?
I wouldn't. But now that we're about to enter the top 5, I'm willing to guess that there's not a single one in the United States in the top.
Well, we're going to find out because I
can't imagine that there's one.
That's better than the ones we've talked about far, right?
I haven't been to any of the ones we've talked about, but I've been to plenty of the ones in the United States. Yeah.
Here was one thing about Kuala Lumpur I wanted to mention. It is such a great airport. It actually has transplanted a chunk of Malaysian rainforest into the terminal itself.
Nice.
How's that? Isn't that cool?
There you go.
You go walking by that. Number 5. Could this be the first American airport?
Oh, really?
No. It's Vancouver. Vancouver International Airport. Not far away, however. It's a beautiful, comfortable, clean, and they say very friendly airport in Vancouver. I'm trying to remember if I've ever been to that particular airport. And the answer is no. I've been to Vancouver, but I didn't go by plane. Okay, number 4. Munich International Airport in Germany. Well-reviewed for its efficiency and its ease of navigation. And that is so very important. Number 3. Maybe this is the one, Chris. You ready?
All right, what do we got?
Helsinki.
Nope, not even close.
International Airport in Finland. This innovative and transit-friendly airport excels in terms of comfort, convenience, cleanliness, and customer service. All important. Here we go. We only got 2 left. I wonder if there's a U.S. airport in the group. Number 2. Seoul. Incheon International Airport in South Korea. I'm very surprised. Impeccably clean. Superior customer service, and the volume of comfortable sitting and nap locations is tremendous. Airports would know. Amenity-wise, the terminals truly are going above and beyond. You'll find indoor gardens, a spa, small shopping extravaganzas located throughout. So they get to be number 2. So here is the final one, and the question is whether or not it's an American airport.
I think 100% no.
I cannot imagine. There's no way that the number one friendliest customer service airport in the world is in the U.S. There's just no way.
Let's find out. And the number one top airport is Tampa International Airport.
Stop it.
No, I'm kidding.
Stop.
I'm kidding. Did I have you going for just
for
a quick moment?
No,
it's not. It's not. Unfortunately, we didn't make it, although Tampa is a good airport, by the way. I do give Tampa Airport high marks. Number one is Singapore Changi International Airport in Singapore. It's got everything going. It's got a shopping mall. It's got a swimming pool. It's got spas, gyms, lounges, four-story slides, movie theaters, and everything else. Number one is Singapore. There you go, my friends. Freedom Works. We'll talk to you Wednesday.
WTAN, Clearwater, Tampa Bay. WDCF, Dade City, Tampa Bay. WZHR, Zephyr Hills, Tampa Bay.